Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven.
Hello, hello, pod crew. So, after, I think it was the episode before last, when I was talking about hormones and neutering and spaying, I came off it and then I just thought, there's so much more I want to add to it. So I've made a few notes and I thought I would add those bits now in a new episode. So on top of what I was saying before, I wanted to kind of go through with you what to expect with a first season if you've got a young bitch. These are questions that get all the time. Some people who've had dogs for years have maybe always had their bitches spayed before the first season, so never had to go through this, or they may have just had rescues that have already been neutered and spayed before they've got them. So it's not just first-time dog owners that come to me with the questions about first seasons and what to expect and is this normal and things like that. So every dog is different. I've known bitches not come into their first season until around 18 months old. But in general, it's usually between 6 and 8 months old, but you can expect it from about 5 months old. So what happens is their lady bits will swell quite a lot more than probably what you would expect, especially for that first season. And their teats may swell as well, depending on the dog. And then you will get some form of discharge, a bloody discharge. Some dogs are cleaner than others. I mentioned before that Ada's pretty clean, and they may, you know, pay a lot of attention to down there, licking it and keeping clean, and others are just messy. Every bitch is different. Now, a normal season will last around 21 days or 3 weeks, but with the first season, it could be shorter or it could be longer. Unfortunately, I have known like bitches in their first season unfortunately last 6 weeks, but this is a real, real rarity. And on average, you're looking about 2 to 3 weeks for that first season. And during that time, people ask me, well, what do you do? You know, what do we do? So essentially, you either walk them on lead or don't walk them at all. Now, this last season with Ada, I have been walking her away from others. I've not been walking her directly from the house very often, more driving her places and walking elsewhere. I'll come back to why in a second. Or you can literally just keep them in and do like playing and training games and stuff like that in the garden with them for that whole time. Either is fine. The most risky time, depending on the individual, is usually from around 11 to 16 days. It can vary though, so please be careful. So for that first week, your bitch will probably be a bit moody and a bit, you know, subdued. They might end up being a bit off their food, which that's okay. That's fairly normal. They may end up with loose stools. Not diarrhea as such, but just not particularly formed loose stools. This is just the hormones. This is an effect that it can have. These are all normal things and, you know, I wouldn't be worried. And in that period between, say, 11 and 16 days is when they are most likely to accept advances from a male dog. Let's put it that way. This is when they're the most fertile. And the what to look for to kind of see this change is quite often the discharge will go either totally clear, so it looks like there's no discharge, or it will be like a very pale pink, pinkish rather than red. And some people or a lot of people will think, oh, the season's done, there's no discharge, when actually this is the most risky part. Now, a lot of pictures will flag. So if you scratch their back end, just their bum, you know, on the top of their back, they may swing their tail round and like slap it to one side and keep it there. And this is what they would do if a male was, you know, trying to get on them. And they would slap their tail to one side to keep it out of the way, essentially. So when they are doing this and flagging, then that's the time that, you know, is the most risky. And I probably wouldn't be walking the dog at all during those few days. The reason why I say about not walking them from the house is, it depends where you live, let's face it. So when I say I lived in East Manchester for a fair few years when I first got my own dogs, and very densely populated area, quite a few dogs that were just left to roam. So if I was walking an entire bitch from the home, you're almost like leaving a trail of the bitch's scent, so you can invite dogs to kind of like just follow your dog's scent back to your door. But I mean, nowadays you don't tend to get as many like dogs that are just loose and allowed to roam the streets. But that's always stuck with me and what I've kind of stuck with up until this last time with Ada, if I'm honest. But it's also a lot. I haven't had a female large dog of my own in season since I was in Manchester until I'd got Ada. Now, this is her second season that she's literally just finished as of like yesterday. Her first season, she was still going into the prison for work, so she was doing stuff, but I wasn't walking her out outside of that, but she'd got stuff to do, and it was keeping her occupied. Now, this time, she's obviously, we're not going in the prison anymore, and she's a big dog, she needs that kind of exercise, she needs to expend that energy, and while, yes, I could have trained her and played in the garden, there's been opportunities for us to go and do things, and away from other dogs, and I didn't want her to miss out. So that's what we've been doing. But yeah, I don't tend to walk a bitch in season from the home address because of the scent trail thing. But as I say, it depends on what kind of area you live in and how likely it is that you're going to have dogs roaming trying to get in. Because entire males will smell a bitch in season for a... I think I was told, I need to look into this because this is quite old stuff. I was told many years ago for up to 2 miles. I'm not sure that's quite the case. And, you know, on a slightly different note, I've been teaching some workshops this week. And one of the things that is a common occurrence is we do these things, like me and others and dog owners. We find facts out. I say facts with like... inverted commas, or we get given nuggets of information over the years and you just cling on to it and you always abide by that, and then you don't tend to ask why, or is that actually true, or has you know, a science proved that different. And I suppose the whole thing about the 2 miles, I need to look into that now and question it. And I do think it is really valuable to question our knowledge and you know, why we do things in certain ways, because that's the only way we can start to grow. That's, and then what you tend to find after that kind of heightened period is that when they're the most fertile and most accepting of males, is you may get a discharge back. It probably won't be as heavy for a few days to a week up until, you know, ideally around 21 days. And the swelling will still be there. Now, because this is a first season particularly that we're addressing, the lady parts of your female dog will never go back down to what they were pre-first season. They will be less swelling, they will be smaller than when they are in season, but it will never go as small as. So just be prepared for that. And their nipples will likely be more enlarged than when they were pre-first season. It's starting to then learn what is normal for your dog. So post-season, any season, not just first season, I make a conscious effort not to fuss or stroke their belly very much. This is quite a thing for me anyway, whether it's male or female, but of not going overboard with the belly rubs. But any kind of friction, movement over those mammary glands can encourage the production of milk. And then you can end up with phantom pregnancies, you can end up with mastitis, you know, like there's lots of things. So I tend to be quite careful on that front. And especially seeing as I've got Daxies who were just prone to phantom pregnancies and producing milk, essentially. So the more that you mess with them, the more likely you are going to get milk, and the more hassle it is all round. I did mention in the previous episode on hormones that a bitch will smell as if she is pregnant to other dogs for 9 weeks after a season, no matter if they've been mated or not. But yeah, so the other side of having a bitch in season is if you have a male dog who is entire also in the house. It's hard work. Yeah, I mean, I've done it for many years. Do I enjoy it? No. Even though Moss, for example, is 13 and a half, he's still entire. He knows his job. He was previously a stud dog. Although we haven't had lots of howling or anything this time, we've had more marking behaviour, cocking his leg within the house. But we have also had another entire male recently staying with us, so that, you know, kind of, it figures. But if you've never been through this before, there are a few things to keep in mind. One of them is that a male dog will more than likely go off their food because they are so concerned about mating the entire bitch in the house. This is normal. It causes quite a high amount of stress for the male. It is possible for dogs and bitches to mate through cages. So through cage bars, through baby gates. So if you have a male and a female that are both entire in the house and the bitch is in season, then, and you are crate and rotate, which is usually my procedure. If you are leaving them unattended, then one is in a crate and then in a separate room or behind another barrier, just so no accidents can happen. Touch wood. So far, I've not managed to have an accident over the years, and I've experienced many seasons with entire males in the house. So that just, I mean, if you've got a male who knows what he's doing, as in an actual stud dog, then what you usually find is the first week is pretty easy, the first week of season, because they know it's not time yet. I'd still keep them separate, but it's not stressful. It's not whinging, whining, howling, which you... That's common with this situation, the whinging, the whining, the howling, lots of noise, out of frustration because, you know, the pheromones and the hormones start to take over. And yeah, it's not fun. And after that first week, then things start to get harder. As of today, my guys are back together. I am not worried. None of them are paying her any attention. I've also had both of the Daxi girls humping Ada. Even though, you know, technically that's not a risk of pregnancy, it's not particularly nice for Ada. So there's been lots of, like, doing shifts of, okay, Ada can come and have cuddles, Ada can chill out, okay, Ada goes away, now we're going to get the Daxies out. When previously I could have just had all the girls together and Moss separate and then swap those over. So they're all things to consider. I have done seasons before where I've literally just shipped Moss or the entire male off to a friend, to family, and that works a lot easier and a lot better. Just situations just didn't work out this time, so just live with it. But you've also got to be very, very strict with other family members, or at least people who are living within the house. They need to know just how important it is that they're kept separate, and there's no, oh well, they're only going out for a wee, they'll be fine. No, I mean, by all means, if you're stood out there with them, watching them, actually watching them and not on your phone, then you can probably get away with it. I've done that a few times when I've been stuck for time recently. But yeah, it's amazing how quick these things can happen. And yes, there are like pretty much like morning after injections, morning after pills for dogs. And they come with a big price tag. And if you do plan on breeding the bitch in future, that can mess with their hormones and lessen their fertility moving forward. So, yeah. I have known of cases where accidents have happened that people have not been aware until, you know, the dog is visibly pregnant. And then rather than letting the litter be born, they've had basically opted for the dog to have an abortion and spay at the same time, basically take everything out. There are options, but, you know, better safe than sorry in my mind. And yeah, it's just not easy is what I'm saying. There are other options available. I would like to get Lil on the pod at some point to discuss the various methods of spaying and neutering. But I did want to touch on the fact that with male dogs, you have the option of the implant, a hormone implant. It's like the size of a grain of rice. It's almost like a microchip that gets put in, and it reduces the testosterone so much. And it's almost like a try before you buy with having their balls off. As in, if you're worried that you're male dog is nervous and fear reactive, for example, it's quite a well-known thing that you shouldn't get a fearful dog neutered because you are taking away what little confidence they do have with the hormones. However, and what, yeah, so when you've took the hormones away, when you've had their balls off, there's no going back, is there? Like, you can't just go, oh, let's just put them back on, or let's give them some testosterone. It doesn't work like that. So at least with the implant, it's like a trial. Depending on the size of the dog, lasts around 6 months, maybe longer in some dogs. It's about 6 months is what you can pretty much rely on. And what you find is the size of their balls will reduce during that time, and any kind of male testosterone related behaviors will reduce, and you can see what their behavior would be like. And I think it's always a good thing to do. Not like it's become a lot more common in the last decade, but you may need to ask around a couple of vets to see whether they provide it and discuss it with them. But it is becoming a lot more of common practice for it now, which is always good. But even with an implant, I personally wouldn't trust a bitch in season around a dog with an implant just in case. But, you know, someone may prove me wrong there. The thing what I didn't mention before with getting a bitch spayed, a bit like with the insecure dog, if you get them neutered, a lot of the time you're taking away what little confidence they have with the hormones. With bitches, if you get them spayed and there were already behavior problems, reactivity, fearful behaviors, things like that, I do find from personal experience with my own dogs and with clients' dogs is that once they're spayed for that first 4 months after, they are fine. All your problems have been cured that you wanted, and then the behaviors come back with vengeance with certain cases. I can't say that's for everything, but you run that risk when you get them spayed. That's exactly what happened with Bella, but there were already issues there. And of course, I'm sure most people know that you do run the risk of a bitch being incontinent after spaying, although this is less and less common nowadays. It used to be a lot more common. I do think surgery on dogs has got better, and vets are more proficient, and it's not such a risk anymore, but it is a risk, and that's something to consider. Yeah, I have to put all of this with a bit of a caveat. So when I'm talking about personal experiences with client dogs and things like that, of course, by nature, I am going to see the worst. I'm going to see the horror stories. People are going to come to me with the dogs that, you know, are a nightmare, that they're really struggling with. And then we get to the bottom of it. And sometimes it's the timing of, or they shouldn't have been spayed, or whatever it is. So, of course, by nature, I'm going to see all the worst cases. I'm sure there are a million more cases out there. You know, none of this was an issue and is not a problem. And some people are going, Sarah, what the hell are you on about? So just keep that in mind. I'm aware of this, but it makes me more careful and more calculated when I'm making decisions for my own dogs, because I know how wrong it can go, but 99% of the time it's fine. A conversation that I had with one of my crew members, actually, not long after the last hormones episode had gone up, she was getting her dog spayed. And this particular dog, despite her breed, isn't really that driven by food. When with this breed, you would expect it to be very driven by food, but nope, which, you know, there's always the exception to the rule, and she obviously is it. Fed back to my crew member, I says, well, we may find that after spaying that she is more foodie, which will make her easier to motivate and train. And she kind of looked at me, gone out, and right, this is another thing to add to my next podcast. So because they've been spayed or neutered, they have less need for the amount of calories you were giving them. And I was advised many years ago, and it's something that I've stuck by, again, something that I probably need to research again now, is that after being spayed, I think it was a vet that told me many, many years ago, 30% less food permanently after spaying or neutering. They're more likely to put on weight. They do not have the same need for the calorie content because the hormones are not there and the reproductive system isn't, you know, using some of the calorie intake. And even though I've known this for many years and gone by it, when I had Ripple spayed, she still ballooned. So she's on like literally next to nothing now to keep her on top form. So every dog is different. I'd probably say that she's actually on 40% less food than what she was on. But then again, her hormones were all over the place before she was spayed, which is why she was spayed. So maybe there was more need for extra calories to keep all that functioning. Don't know. but just keep that in mind. But yeah, you may end up with a more trainable dog because they are more wanting of food. It does make them a little bit hungrier, whether or like just in general. And I think some of that is they're pleasure seekers, as we are. They're not seeking flirting and sexual activity anymore, but they are, you know, but food makes them feel good. Again, depends on the breed, but quite often I do find that having having the hormones taken away can actually make them a bit more foodie, which for some dogs makes life easier. For other dogs like Ripple, who's always been foodie, now she's mega foodie and it's annoying. So yeah, just keep that in mind. Going back to the implant for a second, I've worked with, so when I say that, you know, and a lot of veterinary advice nowadays, which is great, is, you know, if the dog's fearful or anything like that, then don't get them neutered. I've worked with, I'd say, a handful of male dogs that have had fear aggression issues, and I'm not sure what I can put it down to other than gut instinct, which is not very scientific, I understand that, where nothing behavior modification program wise was particularly making enough of a difference with the dog, making a difference but not making as much as what you would expect it to, and constantly getting in trouble with other dogs, like almost other dogs making a beeline for them and then there being scraps. And quite often these are the dogs that have been attacked that many times. They've learned how to stand up for themselves and, you know, well, all right, if you're right in front of me, I'm just going to get you. But actually it stems from fear. And with these particular dogs, they've been entire and the owners have been saying, oh, you know, I want to get them neutered, but I know it's not the best thing. And I've said, get the implant, because at the end of the day, and other people, other professionals have said, no, because you're taking away, even though it's only for 6 months or whatever. And I've had this gut feeling that said, no, we need to do this. This is what's going to help them, even though it goes against everything else when it comes to taking hormones away and taking confidence away and things. But there is a specific style and type of dog or specific behaviours. I'm not talking about every dog where I've had this gut feeling. And obviously every time that I've had this gut feeling and they've gone and had the implant and then it's helped them, that's just then fed on the next time I've seen that particular type of dog and that particular type of case, of course. And the only thing that I can put it down to, and obviously I personally can't test for this, is these dogs had almost an overload of testosterone or some other pheromone, I don't know, but I'm guessing testosterone, which meant that they stunk of testosterone to other dogs, other male dogs, which almost put their back up, which would then make them want to attack the dog with more testosterone, and it becomes a vicious cycle. When actually taking away or reducing that testosterone means that other dogs aren't particularly attracted to them, and it makes life better and my life more manageable, and then you can just go to kind of a more standard desensitization program around other dogs with the dog that has had the implant and then eventually neutered, because although it's based from fear, you are taking away the trigger to other dogs to then approach said dog, if that makes sense. As I say, I've seen this quite a few times. I don't know whether I've just attracted them. I don't know whether other professionals have had this. I know I've disagreed with a few professionals over individual dogs where we've both known the dogs, and that's been my view. But all along I've been with the clients and said, look, this is my gut feeling. This is why it's my gut feeling. I'd like to suggest that you try the implant. And of course, if it doesn't work, while it's still 6 months of things not being helped, it is only 6 months rather than a lifetime. And until, like, if you'd had their ball straight off, at least this can be reversed when a full neutering can't be. So yeah, just food for thought. And I'm sure I will come off this and realise there was a load more things that I wanted to add. As you can tell, I'm quite passionate about these kind of things. But yeah, keep that in mind about having a lesser need of calories, so less food once they're done, what to expect with a first season with a bitch, and consider the implant if you've got a male dog. Yeah, lots to think about. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to leave it there for the subject, but I do want to thank the ones of you who have reached out to me and offered words of encouragement, constructive criticism, and comments about the podcast. It's all been really useful. It really has. And I appreciate it taking, you know, a minute or two or longer. Some of the messages I've had have been quite long. But again, taking that time to reach out to me and give me some honest feedback has been really, really helpful. It's also been really, really encouraging, and I've took it all on board. So thank you very much, and keep it coming. You know, I am all for people reaching out to me. And at the same time, if you've got any questions, we could have like a mailbox section of the pod. If you've got any questions, if you've got any suggestions of subjects that you want me to cover when it's solo episodes, or even suggestions of guests that you'd like to hear, I'd love to hear them. Please send them over. And yeah, I'll leave it there. But thank you very much. Thanks for listening, and I will see you next week. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog-owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.